Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg made his highly anticipated testimony before Congress yesterday. It was a five-hour hearing before a joint session of the Commerce and Judiciary Committees. We're talking about takeaways from yesterday's hearing on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Here, Senator John Thune, chairman of the Commerce Committee, in his opening statement setting the scene.
It's extraordinary to hold a joint committee hearing. It's even more extraordinary to have a single CEO testify before nearly half of the United States Senate. But then Facebook is pretty extraordinary.
The senator from South Dakota later questioned Zuckerberg about the loss of trust, saying, after more than a decade of promises to do better, how is today's apology different? Part of Zuckerberg's response drew from Facebook's humble roots, growing into 2 billion active users today. Let's bring in Nick Proferis. He is an assistant professor at the University of Kentucky School of Information Science. He earned his PhD from the UW-Madison. He co-authored research published last year titled Ethics Regulation in Social Computing Research, Examining the Role of Institutional Review Boards. Nick, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Mark Zuckerberg formally apologized to Congress for mistakes that led to the scandal involving the data firm Cambridge Analytica. Zuckerberg has apologized in the past. What was different this time around?
Well, a couple of things were different this time around. First, of course, he was doing it in front of Congress, which is a little bit different than the way that he's usually done this. I think that he did do a couple of things that were pretty significantly different. I think he took much more direct ownership of the issue at hand. And I think this time he's really publicly struggling a little bit with Facebook's actual impact on society, the fact that we are now having conversations about things like election interference on Facebook, the fact that we're having conversations, much more broad social conversations about privacy. I think the scale of this is pretty significantly different, and I think that some of the other things that he's doing, such as inviting in social scientists to try to help understand this problem and get a grip on things like the impact that Facebook's having on election cycles, is also different. Typically, we have seen Facebook try to keep solutions typically in-house. I think that Zuckerberg in his testimony indicated that he was open to things like regulation, although he put a lot of caveats around it, also kind of made this a little bit more unique.
Well, he also had to confront Facebook's for quote-unquote monopoly power when Senator Lindsey Graham asked him to name his biggest competitor, and he couldn't. What might we make of that Lindsey Graham was probing a monopoly?
I think that's really interesting, but I think that his inability to articulate a single competitor also shows the vast way in which Facebook is sort of horizontally integrated, because it owns a lot of other companies, right? It owns Instagram, it owns WhatsApp, Oculus, all of these different things that sort of make up what Facebook is. And so I am actually a little bit sympathetic to Zuckerberg from this standpoint, as there is no one single business that really does all of the things or really is operating at the scale that Facebook is. There are, Facebook does have competitors in the sense of, Twitter is a competitor to Facebook, but Twitter doesn't do all of the things that Facebook does. So the question of monopoly power, I think, is really interesting. I don't think that Facebook necessarily has a monopoly on social activity on the web. Certainly, Zuckerberg cited studies that indicate that most people use at least 8 different either tools or technologies to, communicate with friends and family, and that these are competitors. But I do think that there is no sort of single one company that you can point to as a direct competitor that does all of the things that Facebook does kind of underscore the social power that they have.
You've analyzed Mark Zuckerberg's public rhetoric. Is this time that he had in front of the Senate different, or does it track with his persona over the years?
I think for the most part, this tracks with his history of apologies. So I I just want to provide a little bit of background here. So as part of some of my work with Michael Zimmer at UW-Milwaukee and Anna Lauren Hoffman, who is now at the University of Washington, we built an archive of all of the things that Mark Zuckerberg has ever said in public in terms of talking about Facebook.
From way back in 2004.
Yeah, from 2004 to 2015, at the time when the article was published. But Michael Zimmer has continued to keep the Zuckerberg files up to date, including, I'm sure, will be today's and yesterday's testimony will also be in there shortly. And, you know, we sat down and said, okay, well, how has the way that he's talked about this platform evolved over time? And so we, you know, sat there and read through almost a decade and a half now of Zuckerberg's language about Facebook. And he has had numerous apologies for very different kinds of, you know, issues that Facebook's confronted with in terms of user privacy. From very early on in terms of user uproar when they introduced the news feed, to when Facebook allowed user profiles to be discoverable by search engines, to when there was revelations that Facebook was indefinitely keeping copies of user data from deleted accounts. There's a real fascinating history of privacy issues. But generally speaking, what Zuckerberg really tries to do as part of his apologies is, first, you know, he really does try to acknowledge the problem, in the sense that, you know, to say, okay, we hear you, there's a problem here, right? We acknowledge the user outrage. It's a way of making users feel heard, and sort of, if he just ignored the situation and said, oh, this isn't a big deal, right, users would leave in droves. So acknowledging is a really important part of what he does. The second thing he does is typically try to diffuse the blame. And we see some evidence of that to a certain extent. I think he did a much better job yesterday in his testimony. But historically, what he's, you know, tries to do is sort of shift the onus of blame a bit. More recently, this is, he's acknowledging that there was a breach of trust between Facebook and users, but he has really shifted the blame, number one, onto Cambridge Analytica. And the researcher Kogan, who went and sold the data that that they pulled from this quiz app, but he also really tries to make sure that, you know, users essentially have measures of control, right, and that they're responsible for their own privacy to a certain extent. Now, Zuckerberg typically tries to say, we're going to introduce some kind of different tools to manage this particular problem. And certainly that's been their approach with this. They've introduced a tool where you can look to see whether or not you've been impacted by Cambridge Analytica. And I think that you have some instructions on your website on, yep, how users can go about doing this. But, you know, the part of the reason that he does this is because, you know, tools make the problem seem manageable. And manageable by Facebook in particular, right? And this is a way of putting the locus of control in Facebook, of saying that, you know, we don't need people coming from the outside to necessarily solve this problem. It's something that we can handle. It's something that, you know, we can change going forward.
Which brings in the conversation about regulation, which we'll be getting to in just a moment with Nick.
Exactly.
With Nick Prefuras. He's an assistant professor at the University of Kentucky School of Information Science. He earned his PhD from UW-Madison. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you want to hear from Mark Zuckerberg? What's the role of Congress in making things different next time? Do you think Facebook will take concrete steps to change? 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. So before we dive into some of the issues of the testimony from members of Congress, third-party data is certainly a focal point throughout this whole issue. Can you give us a quick lesson here? What does it mean for a third party to access data through Facebook?
Sure. So historically, Facebook had a developer system that essentially Facebook opened up its platform very early on to invite people to come and build applications that would be integrated into Facebook systems. These are things like Farmville, games, quizzes that would sort of operate within apps.facebook.com. And what had happened in this particular situation is that someone had built a quiz. When you agree to use one of these third-party applications, historically what had happened is that before you actually were allowed to use the application, you had to agree to share certain kinds of data with and authorize the application to allow certain kinds of data to be transferred from Facebook to the application. And this included some personal information, but also might include information about your friends. And so that's how, in this case, Cambridge Analytica ended up getting having, you know, 80 million.
87 data, million. Yeah.
Yeah, data on 87 million people when not that many people actually used the quiz.
We're going to pause right there with Nick Preferis, who stays with us as our guide to CEO Mark Zuckerberg's testimony. You can join in the conversation. We'll pick it up after a news update on the Ideas Network. Senators on Capitol Hill grilled Facebook founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg for 5 hours yesterday, probing the company's handling of user privacy in the wake of the Cambridge Analytica scandal that exposed the data of 87 million users. We're talking about the testimony on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. When asked if he was angry about how Cambridge Analytica used Facebook for political answers, Zuckerberg said, quote, absolutely. Here he is.
The most important thing that I care about right now is making sure that no one interferes in the various 2018 elections around the world. We have an extremely important U.S. midterm. We have major elections in India, Brazil, Mexico, Pakistan, Hungary coming up. And we're going to take a number of measures, from building and deploying new AI tools that take down fake news, to growing our security team to more than 20,000 people, to making it so that we verify every advertiser who's doing political and issue ads, to make sure that that kind of interference that the Russians were able to do in 2016 is going to be much harder for anyone to pull off in the future.
Nick Preferis has been watching it all, taking it all in. He's an assistant professor at the University of Kentucky School of Information Science. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Whose fault is this? Should Facebook be held responsible? Is it third parties who were bad actors here? Or should users be accountable for the information they provide online to a service that's free? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. So taking a lot in there from that cut we just heard from Zuckerberg, he talking about major elections in countries like India, Brazil, Mexico, Pakistan. We also heard of him say an arms race here. And it really makes social networking, social media, become much more of a political weapon, if you will. Can you elaborate on what he's saying there?
Sure. So as these tools have become more prominent in you know, political discussion and in social discussion and cultural discussion, there's been a lot of different efforts to try to weaponize these technologies to by bad actors to try to do things like influence the way that people view a particular issue, to do things like cause divisions around existing debates within society. I think that one of the interesting things about this is that I think he is really publicly grappling. He said this is priority number one with the impact. And he talked about how there's this organization, the Internet Research Association group that was part of this campaign in Russia to spread disinformation, to cause derision during the 2016 election. And one of the things that he said is this isn't something that we're going to solve. You're never going to totally solve this issue as long as it's someone's job to spread propaganda and disinformation, if they are working for that particular organization. I think this is something that not just Facebook has to grapple with. Twitter, this has happened a lot on Twitter. We see a lot of gaming of YouTube in terms of spreading propaganda. This is something that not just Facebook, but all sort of social media companies, all media companies that have become ways that we get political information are having to grapple with.
He seemed to also lean heavily on the future promise of artificial intelligence. He just said they're AI tools. Whenever he was asked about how Facebook would improve its moderation tools, he went to the AI line to help Facebook quickly sort through hate speech and other problem posts. Is AI the answer?
I think that AI is part of the solution for Facebook because they have an incredible problem, which is this problem of scale, right? They have 2 billion people. How do you moderate and understand the kinds of content that 2 billion people are posting? You would need a massive army to be able to do this if you were to rely strictly on people. I think that Zuckerberg's testimony, positioned AI as the salve that you just rub a little AI on it and the problem will go away. And I don't think that that is really a robust answer to the actual scope of the problem. AI has its own problems that we didn't unfortunately get into as part of this testimony. There's a lot of questions about what kinds of data do you use to train AI. AI still has to be designed in a way. What happens if someone introduces bias? And there's always bias in a system, but what happens if someone introduces a particular bias as part of designing AI, right? And there's a real interesting question here about how transparent are systems like AI? Will users know how AI operates and the kinds of decisions that AI is going to be capable of making? So I think it helped Zuckerberg in his testimony just to say, oh, this is a really technical solution that we're going to use to try to deal with this, but to leave the details very fuzzy. It's sort of this black box that that no one really wants to, or at least in Congress in the testimony, that anyone really wanted to look into too closely.
And it did seem that senators had some catching up to do on really how Facebook works, just with some basic questions about data collection and advertising practices. So do you think that the questions they asked him were enough to figure out what is really going on here?
I think some of the lines of questioning were useful in terms of getting into some depth around some of the particular issues around Cambridge Analytica, around things like potentially discriminatory advertising that also came up around how they choose particular content for things like the newsfeed. I do think, though, that, congressional leaders are not necessarily technical experts. I think that their line of questioning probably actually reflected a lot of the lines of questioning that if we picked up, 500 people randomly from the U.S., it would reflect the kinds of questions that they might actually ask. You would have varying levels of expertise in terms of understanding how this particular technology works. In fact, if you picked up 500 people, you'd probably get 600 views on how they think, that Facebook actually works.
Let's bring in Todd now, joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Todd.
Good morning. Yes, I was concerned about one thing that came up in the hearings yesterday, and the senator asked what happens to the information that Facebook has allowed a third-party user to use if the customer or if the individual on Facebook deletes their account. Is that information still available to the third-party user who had access to it earlier? Facebook maintains that they delete it, but there's no protocol apparently to say that anybody else who has information, that same information has to delete it from their database. And I point particularly to two speeches that were given by Carol, I'm forgetting her last name, but Jim Messina and Carol, whatever her name is, as well as Maxine Waters, when they were interviewed. They gave speeches discussing about how they were given access to the entire Facebook database for the Obama campaign, and when it was discovered, they actually hacked it. And when it was discovered by Facebook, Facebook turned a blind eye to it, and the information officer, the data management information officer from the Obama campaign said it was because, quote, they were on our side. And both of these speeches are available online, and they've been out there for a long time. So to put this all onto the Cambridge Analytica, that's a drop in the water compared to the information that the DNC has on everybody if they want to use it. I'm talking about the entire database, not just the 87 million.
Right. Todd, thank you so much for the call. Let's bring Nick in to respond. Nick, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So, it's not obviously just this particular issue of Cambridge Analytica. There are a lot of different kinds of apps across the political spectrum that have been developed and that user information has gone to. And Facebook is now having to go back and run these audits. They're indicating that they're going to go back and audit anyone who is running, these particular apps to go back and understand what's happened to this data. In the case of Cambridge Analytica, it's a little bit more interesting because Cambridge Analytica had actually certified legally through a contract that they had actually deleted the data when they hadn't. Facebook now needs to go back to all of these other apps and ask, have you actually deleted the data when people have deleted accounts. They need to set up auditing mechanisms. It's absolutely not just Cambridge Analytica they need to do this with, obviously. That's sort of the most current issue that has really reared its head in terms of what's happened to this data that's been shared with all of these third parties now. There's some interesting questions too, where people do things with this data. It's not just that this data is bulk collected and then just sits there necessarily. People build and infer additional information from what they collect. What happens to that data? If I revoke my consent to Facebook to continue to have certain content available, what happens to the third parties who've collected that data? What happens to the products that people have produced using that data?
Matt from Wausau emailed and he says, Facebook is a free service. No one is forced to use it. If the American people are malleable enough to believe whatever they see on the internet, maybe it's their problem. Anyone who believes for a second, Matt says, that Facebook wasn't data mining and selling the results is naive. So let's explore that a little bit. Facebook is free, and there were some hints from senators where, and Mark Zuckerberg seemed to leave it open a bit, whether you could buy some privacy for yourself.
Yeah, so I think that the argument that that people should expect the worst case scenario to a certain extent, maybe users do need to develop a better understanding of what can happen to their data. I think that particularly since we have events like this now, that people will start to develop those better understandings and perhaps be more skeptical, certainly at least of Facebook, but perhaps other services in which they're being offered things for quote unquote free. But at the same time, I do think that we need to take a balanced view of responsibility in this particular situation. There's lots of blame to go around in terms of both Cambridge Analytica and the researcher who then went and sold the data without users' authorization, but also in terms of Facebook, in terms of how they talk to users about information flowing. Facebook was put under was investigated by the FTC for having deceptive practices in terms of what it was telling users in terms of how it was protecting their privacy and what they were actually doing. And one of the conversations that occurred in this past testimony was whether or not Mark Zuckerberg thinks that Facebook has actually violated the FTC consent decree to, order. Of course, his position is no, that this wasn't our violation, but I do think from the user side, it's they're put in a really tough situation where they're not given clear instructions or information about how the information they share with Facebook is going to flow to this wider third-party ecosystem.
And Mark Zuckerberg told senators that Facebook is investigating apps that have had access to a large amount of information in the past. Let's take a listen to that really short clip.
If we find that someone improperly used data, we're going to ban them from Facebook and tell everyone affected.
Is this actually helpful, Nick, if these apps are already improperly using the data? Isn't it too late?
Well, to a certain extent, yes, it is. It is kind of too late. And I actually got the notification that one of my friends, had taken this personality quiz and that my data was shared. And it's kind of like, well, what do I do with this now?
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't go back in time. I can't really control what my friends do with this particular data. I think that you know, the way that this was presented to users is, well, we're going to tell you about what's happened. You know, we're going to tell you this was a bad thing, and we're going to tell you what we're doing going forward. So please continue to trust us, right? And I do think that in improving clear, you know, in providing clear communication to users about what's happened is important. But there's only so much that users can really do with that information, right? They have no real ability to go and you know, negotiate a different set of terms with Facebook. Certainly something they can do if they're upset about this is reach out to their congressional leaders and, you know, and pitch legislation that they would like to see. But, you know, that's, again, on them.
That's a heavy lift as well. Let's go to Steve in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is about the guest comment about propaganda being spread on Facebook, which is true. I mean, I think there anyone could really post whatever they want. As long as it doesn't break the community standards of Facebook. But, you know, that seems to be okay to me. I mean, the news media does the same thing in relation to how they shape stories or have headlines that are out there that are biased or misleading. So why not have individuals be able to spread their own propaganda, if you will, if our news media is allowed to do that, and they do it under the cover of saying they're fair and balanced?
So making it more like a free-for-all a bit, as Steve is saying. Nick, what do you make of that?
Well, I think that one of the questions here is about attribution. I think that one of the issues with this question of propaganda is, you know, so we have a news media that, you know, produces a story, and it's attributable to a specific set of reporters, or it's attributable to the company. The company, if there's misinformation in it, in terms of news media, can be held under certain U.S. Regulations to be liable for example, false light, invasions of privacy, other kinds of situations in which they publish knowingly false information. However, one of the situations that we've run into, both not just on Facebook but on Twitter, is that we have an issue of misrepresenting who is actually producing this information. There's not been a lot of transparency necessarily in terms of knowing that the person on the other end is actually who they say they are. Additionally, one of the things that Facebook actually did indicate that it was willing to get behind, and Twitter has done as well, is something called the Honest Ads Act, mm-hmm. Which is a way that that information about who is paying for political advertisements is made transparent to the users, that a user can, in theory, go and look to see the other advertisements that a particular page is promoting. This is a good way of increasing transparency. I do see some differences between state-produced propaganda and the current news media, but I do think that, you know, the caller's comment about bias inherent in the actual content is a, you know, a feasible point. I do think that it's important that all of us be able to have, you know, political conversations from across the spectrum. And that's actually something that Zuckerberg was sort of pushed on a little bit about what his company is doing, perhaps in terms of tipping the scales one direction or another.
Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg is entering his second day of testimony on Capitol Hill. His appearance at a joint hearing of the Senate Commerce and Judiciary Committees yesterday marks the first time that Zuckerberg has testified before Congress. The hearings come nearly a month after news broke that Cambridge Analytica accessed information from as many as 87 million Facebook users without their knowledge. University of Kentucky's Nick Proferas stays with us. He teaches in the School of Information Science. Getting your thoughts on the testimony at 800-642-1234. Are you on Facebook? Will you continue using it? Maybe you're reluctant to delete your account because you rely on it. Call in. Email back after this news. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg is scheduled to testify today again, this time before the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Yesterday, in a five-hour hearing before senators, Zuckerberg tried to defuse often heated questions about Facebook failing to protect the personal information of millions of Americans. We're talking about the takeaways after day one of testimony here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Democratic Senator Bill Nelson of Florida cut to the chase when it was his turn at the mic.
If you and other social media companies do not get your act in order, none of us are going to have any privacy anymore.
Nelson is the ranking member of the Senate Commerce Committee. He called for more oversight of social media platforms to protect user data. Nick Proferis is watching all this. He's an assistant professor at the University of Kentucky's School of Information Science. Your questions and insights are welcome at 800-642-1234. What's the role of Congress in making things different next time? Do you think Facebook will take concrete steps to change? And how can the social media giant prove it's implementing new practices and policies that protect information? Have you changed your activity on Facebook? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go back to the phones now with Bob joining us from Neenah. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. I just wanted to point out that, or actually it's a follow-up on that last caller. Some of us are very savvy on Facebook. We can pick up trolls or moles by what they say, and you can also look at some of their history. And you can weed out the people that are not real people or who they say they are. It's nice once in a while to catch a troll, and you can report this to Facebook.
Have you done that before, Bob?
I'm sorry?
Have you done that before, Bob?
Oh, yes, quite a bit. It's a lot of fun. You can catch them, and you can call them out on it, and you can report it to Facebook. And they will take action, and they will delete that account after you point out to them and they check it out. They will delete it. They will delete that user's profile and everything else that goes along with it.
Does that make you feel more secure in using the platform?
Well, I'm not concerned about being secure because I don't care. I don't give a rat what people think about me and what I post, because I'm very outspoken, and people have tried to shut me up before and it doesn't work. And I voice my opinion, and you can catch these trolls and moles. And when you put them in their place, they're basically bullies and cowards, and they back down and back off, and, they can be deleted by Facebook also.
Well, Bob, thank you for bringing that point to the conversation. Nick, it sounds like, Bob takes action. He watches for this, and he's savvy, and he sees Facebook being assertive in taking action on these accounts.
Yeah, so I think that's fantastic. Facebook really relies on the community essentially reporting either bad actors or kinds of content that might violate Facebook's policies. They've been, it was interesting in the testimony because they said, right now the AI and the automated tools for doing this kind of thing are really 5 to 10 years off. And so Facebook's going to continue to have to really rely on us to essentially, report when we see things that might violate the rules. They are taking concrete steps to try to be able to identify, particular, for example, IP ranges that might be attributable to things like the IRA, the Internet Research Agency, the organization that is involved in spreading certain kinds of propaganda. But there are a lot of other bad actors who aren't, necessarily representing themselves the way that they should be.
Let's bring in Lola now in Wausau. Lola, hi.
Hello. Before, when you were talking about Facebook being a free service, I more think that the issue is that this is a public venue, and, we all know that. It's probably the biggest public venue in the United States, and we put our things out there, and yet we expect privacy. If I were to run into the middle of town and to shout out some kind of information and then people would go and act on what I said, that was on me, right?
Lola, thank you so much. And I want to allow us to play Mark Zuckerberg perhaps a bit more on that point. Let's take a listen.
It's not enough to just connect people. We have to make sure that those connections are positive. It's not enough to just give people a voice. We need to make sure that people aren't using it to harm other people or to spread misinformation. And it's not enough to just give people control over their information. We need to make sure that the developers they share it with protect their information too. Across the board, we have a responsibility to not just build tools, but to make sure that they're used for good.
So building on what Lola said there, Mark Zuckerberg is really looking at this as a global thing here, Nick, and that it's also a two-way street. You know, people provide information, and then on the other end, that, you know, that information has to be dealt with.
Right. So I think one of the important things that, we're sort of struggling with as a society right now is, what does it actually mean for information to be shared in public? Certainly, if when I was growing up, I didn't have social media, and the fact that I, you know, used to be a terror on a little motorbike, right, didn't really go that far, right? The amount of friction that was involved in allowing the flow of information was pretty significant, right? So unless I was a celebrity, or unless I was really purposely trying to be super public about my activities and would just tell everyone, what I did in public still had sort of a limited range in terms of how far it would go. I think that one of the things that we are realizing is that when we start talking about the word public and public information in the sense of things like Facebook, the scope is of such a different significant scale. You know, we might think of, you know, when we go onto Facebook that, you know, we're sharing information with, you know, our friends and our family, and Facebook does a lot of work to try to, you know, say that those are the people who we can expect to directly interact with. But that there are these other actors that might be out there sort of scraping public information off of Facebook. That's not a audience that we typically think of when we think about, what it means to share information in necessarily in public. People have varying degrees of understandings of what it means for information to be public. And I think that was kind of a tension point in some of the testimony. Then on the other end, Facebook is sort of struggling with what it means to actually connect people, that simply providing this service may not be the end of their sort of moral obligation or ethical obligation to users, right? That, you know, they have done a significant job dispositioning themselves as sort of this neutral tool for a long time. But, you know, and to some extent, some people would critique it as sort of a naive view of what it means to just connect people. But certainly we're starting to see how now maybe all connections may not be positive. And that's something that it's interesting to see Zuckerberg struggle with publicly, to recognize that this very idealistic mantra that he's had for quite some time, the purpose, the social mission of Facebook, may not always have desired outcomes.
Well, let's bring the conversation around to regulation, which was a point of discussion during yesterday's testimony with Mark Zuckerberg, saying that in his opinion, there shouldn't be any, but he agreed he would welcome the, quote, right regulation. So what would that look like, or how would regulation of something like Facebook even work?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think that Facebook is realizing that there are certain things, if we have them codified into law, that can increase public trust in these kinds of social systems. Having things like the Honest Ads Act, I think, is one of those situations where Facebook has realized that, you know, this is actually a really good practice, not just for us, but for the industry at large. I think that, there's a lot of different steps that Congress could take in terms of coming up with some regulation. At the extreme end, they could look at, for example, whether or not Facebook actually has too much power and is operating as a monopoly and try to break it up. I don't think that will happen. At more of the conservative end of things, they could look at things like passing laws that maybe do things refine rules and regulations around how terms of service are written. And so saying that, you know, you have this legal document, but maybe there needs to be sort of a condensed version of it that these kinds of platforms offer that's written in plain language so that people can understand it. I think that there's a lot of also interesting things that Congress could do in terms of requiring transparency around secondary uses of data. So, for example, we share a lot of information with Facebook, and Facebook does a lot of things with that information in terms of building models and making inferences about the kinds of people that we are. I think that there could be greater transparency and regulation around Facebook having to notify how exactly they're using user data to do that those kinds of activities. Whether or not there is the will in Congress to actually put any pieces of legislation in place will be really interesting. We saw some different senators say that, you know, we really don't want to have to come in and regulate in this space. We really want you to self-regulate. And I think that that's going to be a real tension in Congress about whether or not they even feel like they have the technical skills to be able to regulate in this space.
Well, as we wrap up here, I was hoping you could get out your grade book. What kind of report card would you give Mark Zuckerberg from yesterday's testimony? What grade did he earn?
I think he got a B+. I think that he did a really, frankly, fantastic job in terms of being responsive to senators, in terms of not being, for example, combative, in terms of putting on the suit and tie and not showing up in a hoodie. I think that he being up there for 5.5 hours while you're just getting grilled is not something I would really wish upon anyone. And I thought he did a really fantastic job of understanding the very different skill sets that senators were coming in with and being responsive. I think that, personally, I would love to have seen him go into more detail about the concrete steps that Facebook is taking and how they are sort of not just sort of pushing the buck onto users in terms of, you know, reconceptualizing privacy as something that users need to control, but actually kind of struggling a bit more publicly with understanding sort of the impacts that they've had on society. You know, the fact that they've really fundamentally changed the way that many of us are social, or that we engage in political conversations, or that we get our news. I think that, you know, if he understood the scope of and communicated that he understood the scope of Facebook's impacts, that would be fantastic.
Well, Nick, thanks so much for spending time with us.
Thank you very much.
Nick Proferis is an assistant professor at the University of Kentucky's School of Information Science. This hour, The Morning Show was produced by Brianne Shasso, Keely Baltina, and Colleen Leahy. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson, executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.